The psychedelic revolution is here. If you want to integrate your visionary experiences into your purpose, get clear on your entrepreneurial path, and help people while you do what you love, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I'm your host, Beth Weinstein. I'm a spiritual business coach, three-time entrepreneur, and a lifelong student of psychedelics and sacred plant medicines. You carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times. This podcast will help you to share your medicine so you can create transformation in the world. Listen in on conversations with psychedelic leaders, changemakers, and conscious entrepreneurs who are living proof that a better world is possible when you follow your heart and live in alignment with your soul. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am so excited to have today's guest joining us from sunny California, or hopefully it's sunny, Rabbi Zach Kamenetz. Hi, Zach.
Great to see you.
Thanks for being here. So I've known about your work for years, and honestly, I've been avoiding interviewing you because of my own deep internalized fears around this Jewish path and the Jewish religion because of my own background, which we'll get into as we were talking about off camera. And you got really excited about doing this kind of process together. So it's interesting because I'm like, oh, here I am. It's like my biggest fear of interviewing a guest like you. But I just want to go over your bio really quickly so people know a little bit about your background. So Rabbi Zach is a rabbi, community leader, and aspiring psychedelic-assisted chaplain based in Berkeley, California. He holds a master's in biblical literature and languages from UC Berkeley and the Graduate Theological Union, and received rabbinic ordination in 2012. As the founder and CEO of Shefa, Zach is pioneering a movement to integrate safe and supported psychedelic use into the Jewish spiritual tradition, advocate for individuals and communities to heal individual and inherited trauma, and inspire a Jewish religious and creative renaissance in the 21st century. Which, by the way, after reading that, it makes me feel much less fear. And, it's so interesting, right? But Zach, I would love to hear just a quick overview of your journey into, you know, what made you even go to theological school and become a rabbi and then, you know, create Shefa. I am pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
Cause I do subscribe to the emails, and of course I've been wanting to go to things and I'm like scared to. Let's hear, what's your background and your upbringing that got you here?
Thank you so much. I was born and raised in Southern California in Orange County. We grew up going to the Reformed temple that my mother was bat mitzvahed in, and then she was married in. It's really interesting. My parents had a horse at their wedding. They like rode away on a horse. Isn't that crazy? I think the horse might have actually even been in the synagogue. But anyway, at some point we moved to North Carolina, and it was, just a vastly cultural shift, like completely different. I realized at that point that I was white and didn't have the same kind of friends that I had when I was in Southern California. But the other major shift was that this Jewish community was well organized, it was tight knit, and there was a sense of camaraderie that I never felt in Southern California, which kind of felt like strip mall Judaism at some point. But the major kind of inciting moment in my path, I was not raised religious. We never talked about divinity. We never talked about spirituality. You know, we checked in with the holidays once every while, but nothing deep or thick in terms of content or feeling. I went on an Israel trip and had a major, spontaneous, endogenous, mystical experience where, you know, that I felt my mind open to the questions of the universe. I felt I was on a path to self-discovery and transformation. And I became observant, religious, on the spot. I didn't know what that meant. No one else could tell me what that meant. I freaked out my parents. I studied at home by myself. And I radicalized myself, I guess, in my bedroom. And you know, slowly just became a lover of Jewish texts and a lover of Jewish ritual and prayer, and spent the rest of my adult life through, you know, education, making up for lost time, learning Hebrew, getting deep into text, becoming, you know, becoming a partner in with these texts. And finally, put it all together in rabbinic ordination, started working in the Jewish community here in the Bay Area. And when COVID hit and I was laid off from my previous job with about 149 other people, I quickly pivoted to founding this organization, Shefa, which is dedicated to Jewish psychedelic support, supporting Jews all around the country, all around the world, whatever their orientation, whatever their background, whatever their commitments, non-commitments, to help them bring the wealth of our traditions, ancient traditions, modern traditions, new traditions, to help support their journeys in this medicine work.
Wow. That is, it's so interesting because I can relate to a lot of this in so many ways.
Great.
So, you know, I'm curious, and you don't have to get into the details if you don't want to, where was the moment where psychedelics came in? And, you know, were you then just like, oh, these two paths, let's bring them together. You know, like, was there just a turning point with psychedelics and, you know, how did that affect your work?
Pretty, unconventionally, even for psychedelics, I was part of a research study and was given two major doses of psilocybin and had never done psychedelics before, but had had this powerful experience. So I knew a little bit of the terrain. So it was familiar in a way, but also prolonged and, you know, varied. Some of it wonderful, some of it terrible, some of it boring, cosmic, you know, everything. But what I really took away from those experiences was in the integration process, I had a sense that what I was being offered in terms of advice or, you know, the questions or the assumptions were not totally resonant with how I thought about myself or my observance or, you know, my desire to recommit myself to my spirit, my spiritual tradition. And I started getting a sneaking sense that maybe other Jewish people as well in other psychedelic spaces are not feeling supported as they are with the kind of cultural competency, religious awareness, awareness of, you know, the variety of Jewish trauma, you know, not just Holocaust trauma, but people from Arab or North African lands or Ethiopian Jews. Like, how do all of these actually find a place where psychedelic elders or sitters or guides or therapists can really understand the depths that are contained in just one small Jew? So that's what we are here to do, is we are here for the global Jewish community and their friends, people who feel inspired by the Jewish path in some way, to connect with each other, to connect with an organization that wants to really see them and be with them in this process, regardless of the setting, and help them integrate their work as Jews and for the benefit, hopefully, of Judaism itself. We want to enrich and be enriched by the psychedelic work of Jews around the world.
This is so beautiful. And I can't wait to dive into this a little bit more because, you know, it's actually been a big and complicated part of my own path. But one quick question I had is, I'm curious, you know, as someone who comes from this, well, like the awakened traditional background and, you know, dove into rabbinical school, how has this been received or not by other, you know, let's say conservative, maybe that's the wrong word, but like traditional conservative Jewish organizations? Like, are you kind of like the black sheep of Judaism, or are people like, wow, this guy's up to something?
I would say probably a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. Initially, there was a sense from Jewish funders or from philanthropists, like, what are you doing? You're talking about something that is illicit and illegal. This is not okay. But at the same time, when I started speaking publicly about my own experiences, which I think was aided by the fact that it was done in a legal setting, it wasn't just like a drug guy talking about my drug stuff, that people were able to reflect back, people everywhere, a lot of people starting to say, I've been waiting for someone to talk to about this that maybe understands me, or I never knew that I could talk to a rabbi, or I never knew someone who could, I didn't have to translate all of my Jewish self part to them. You know, it's like when I look for a therapist, I don't want to talk, you know, a couple sessions, the socio-spiritual dynamics of a Shabbat lunch. I just want someone to understand. I want to do the least amount of cultural religious translating for that person and just be able to jump into the content and the healing. So that's what people have found with me and my colleagues and our organization. And we're also not the first here, but we have created a container where, you know, psychedelically active medicine people and space holders and therapists, artists, mystics have all been able to interact with each other. And that's given rise to the Jewish Psychedelic Summit that I helped co-found 2 years ago with Natalie Ginsberg from MAPS and Madison Margolin from Double Blind. We also have, I helped found a Facebook group called the Jewish Entheogenic Society that basically has like 2,000 members at this point, conversations about what it means to be Jewish and be entheogenically engaged. So we're doing things slowly, but we're gathering the tribes is what I like to say.
To me, it's not slow. I'm like, to me, you guys have been out there like bam, bam, bam. And it's great because I'm sitting here, you know, feeling like, wow, I wish you guys were around like 15 years ago. Because so someone like me, I've been working with entheogens since I was quite young. So it's been a big part of my spiritual path. But I come from this very complicated, which to me is quite normal, religious background. But then when I first went to drink ayahuasca, which was about 10 years ago, I was very involved in a Buddhist group in New York. And luckily, New York, you know, very big mix, melting pot of the U.S. You know, there were Jews everywhere. There were the Buddhists, there were non-Jews, you know, the Christians all coming to this one place. And I remember going to my trusted Buddhist teacher and saying, hey, I'm thinking of drinking ayahuasca, which I was already signed up to go. You know, and of course he was like, no, don't do that. And it's exactly like you said, like, you know, he was one of the people that I turned to for guidance. And then I had a therapist, you know, and again, like this therapist didn't really understand the depth of religious, what I would call like religious trauma. And it's interesting over the years, there's been so much that's come through these journeys around religion, ancestral, like who knows, you know, I don't even like to put a finger on it because I don't even know what it is. It doesn't even matter other than it's coming to surface. But it's interesting also over the years working with my clients who are, you know, a lot of psychedelic integration coaches, healers, various kinds of coaches, you know, people that bring in maybe microdosing or other forms of psychedelics into their healing work. It's actually come up for a lot of my clients as well where they're called to help others with religious trauma or they're dealing with their own or they, you know, have an incident with a client. And it's something that I feel like hasn't been discussed that much, except when I'm in these like small integration circles in the medicine space itself. Then I hear it come up. But out in the public, I think you're one of the very first people. And I've actually interviewed Madison and I've talked to, you know, some other people about this. But I'm curious, you know, the kind of members that you guys have in your community, are they people like me that have had these kind of complex backgrounds and then they dive into the psychedelic space and then all of a sudden things that they didn't think were, like for me, I didn't think they affected me until they came up and I was like, wow, you know, like I'm carrying a lot that I didn't even know about. Is this something that's common? And do you feel like, you know, I'm also in New York, so I always like to say it's like a New York thing. Do you feel like there's a lot of Jews being called towards this path for a reason? Or is that just because I'm in New York and, you know, it's always been part of our New York medicine community?
Well, I would say you're absolutely part of the community, whether you've been to one of our integration circles or not. We're here with you and we're here for you. That yes, this is very common. It's common for people who come to our bi-monthly integration circles. It's common for the one-to-one private integration work that I do with lots of people. It's common for people who come to our psychedelic Torah classes and just are, you know, hearing about the depths of expanded consciousness in Hasidic traditions or Kabbalistic traditions, or even, you know, ways of understanding biblical texts, that people comment about these things, but there just hasn't been a space. There just hasn't been a platform. And so we are seeing this more and more. And I would also say that because in the context, or at least as I understand it, where the conversations around lineage or intergenerational trauma or ancestors are so prevalent in psychedelic discourse in the field, what happens often, even if maybe people haven't had a direct experience of that in their journeys, it's happening around them in the social structures that they're finding themselves in, whether they're, you know, part of an ayahuasca circle, whether they're part of an integration community or just part of psychedelic culture in general. So often what happens is that those questions come up, but not in the medicine space, but that, wait a minute, who are my ancestors? Who am I actually talking about? I can't go past my grandparents. Who are they? What is my lineage? My lineage? Like, all my mother told me is that we were glitzy honors, that they were horse thieves. Like, that's my lineage? Can't be. And so there is this desire for people to get closer to who they truly are, but not all the time in medicine work and not all the time in just being with other people who are speaking in these ways. And, you know, your second question was, how common is this? I think I did read a study from a couple years ago or maybe a decade ago that Jews, at least in North America, they do seek healing arts more than their Gentile neighbors. It's like maybe like 3-1. I can't remember. I have to find the study again, but it was overwhelming. And then I do think that this is reflective of that in psychedelic healing space. But I also have this suspicion, and this is totally a hypothesis. This is probably a projection, maybe, but I'll put it out there. I believe that Jewish people at one of our cores, we have several cores, it says that in our own tradition that we're not prophets, but we're children of the prophets, or we're the grandchildren of prophets. And if anyone has ever opened up a prayer book, or anyone has ever opened up a Haggadah, the book, the collection of texts and rituals and prayers and songs that we use on the night of the Seder, there is all of this language about encountering something that is beyond waking consciousness, either divinity or a miracle or miraculous happenings to an entire nation, or just profound imagery in general, like, you know, the mountains clapping and the rivers singing. Like, that is so rich that I believe that if someone has encountered that either in their lineage or directly, might be like, wait, is this all there is, this material existence? I'm reading this thing, but there are many, many screens around that. People can't access that as something that is meaningful for them for a lot of reasons. I think you were talking about trauma from religion itself, which is very there. People come to us for that also. Yes, common. And I think because maybe a Jew feels something deeper than deep that they can't yet express, and we want to give them the space and the opportunity to express it.
Thank you for sharing that. I'm sitting here feeling into what I've been going through. Because this is like, I told Zach, I was like, did you see my post in your Jewish and Theogenic Society Facebook group? I have been in that group since I think day one or the very early days. And I was scared to share anything in there for fear of, you know, I'm not really Jewish. I'm not Jewish according to the religion. I actually have zero background. I just have this like very, you know, this last name. But anyways, this year I had this like very weird, interesting experience where the first time in my life, I actually felt this pull to go to the High Holidays. And I was like, oh, maybe I should actually go. And then I got all scared. And then I found a place. And then I actually met the woman who's in charge. And I found out it's actually, what do they call it? Like a revival, where it was kind of like kirtan. And the guy who gave the, what I would call like a sermon, you know, it was Kol Nidre on Yom Kippur, and he mentioned plant medicine during the talk. And I was like, oh my God, where am I? This is amazing. And then I just had this experience where I was like, well, wait a second. Like, maybe it's actually okay. Maybe there's something here. Maybe it's, you know, because the more I've grown in my own spiritual path, you know, like ceremony, ritual, singing, you know, like I do my own quote religion. It just doesn't have an official name. It's, you know, the path of the medicine, I guess, because I've been, you know, walking this path for so long and like very deeply in it. And but then I was like, wait a second, this is just a different path without any psychedelics, and it's just as beautiful. So it's been a very interesting experience. But the one thing that keeps coming up for me that I've always been curious about, and I actually, like you said, it's like I've had very few support network people to even talk to about this, other than some friends who are also like me in this, have complicated religious backgrounds. But, you know, through the medicine work, I've had these like really deep ancestral visions, which I know, you know, there was a whole dieta I did in Peru where the theme of the whole dieta was like this deep Jewish ancestral stuff. And it was very hard and very painful. And I came out of it and I was like, wow, I didn't realize like we're just carrying so much of this. And I'm curious about the processing of this. And then also like, where's this all going? Like, I was like, oh, are people like me called to this path of healing because we've had so much, you know, trauma in this lineage? Is that, you know, like, I don't even know if that's true. That's supposedly what the rumor has. But then again, like, everybody's had trauma, you know. But I'm curious, like, are the Jews called to this path of healing because of eons of, you know, persecution and, you know, like trauma for just being who we are? Is that, I mean, I'm just curious what you think of that.
Before just even answering anything, I just want to bring a lot of gratitude and a lot of ease and softness to everything that you just shared. And even just everything that you shared, there's just like myriad steps of going farther and farther and farther up and down. So, you know, I don't want to like rush over that very quickly, because that's like enough. So let's just like pause there.
Yeah, let's pause. And I also want to point out that even the experience of writing a Facebook post and then sharing it in the Jewish and Entheogenic Society group was like nerve-wracking. You know, and it's like, it's so interesting. I have no problem hanging out with tarantulas and drinking ayahuasca, but for some reason, this is like even wanting to interview you. It's been such a weird triggering part of my past that it's probably the one area that I haven't really processed. I've done so much, you know, somatic therapy and deep processing and NLP and Buddhism, and I could go on and on. But then it's like when it comes to this very real piece of like my own background, and on top of it, my father, who comes from the Jewish side, you know, he passed away 15 years ago. So there was there's been a lot of lost like history, you know.
Well, do you want to touch on some of this right now?
Sure. Yeah. Zach had this idea of doing like a live integration. And I'm like, actually, I've never had anything like that. That would be kind of interesting.
Well, I guess the only thing that I would say is, of course, you only share as much as you want to. Of course. But if there's any follow-up or if there's any question that I ask, that we maintain what I might call the 1 millimeter rule, which is, if something feels uncomfortable or is not ready to be discussed or to be touched, like even if it's just 1 millimeter, then you have all of the agency, you have all of the power to just say, I can't do that right now.
Yeah, let's try it. Let's go for it. Because I am, you know, I am curious about how this has the potential, you know, in our planet on so many levels. And it has been coming into my field so much more. You know, I will actually, and maybe this is what we can process, because I've never, I always tell people it took me years to integrate this. When I first worked with Bufo, you know, 5-MeO-DMT, in about 5 years ago, it was like, I know for a fact that it was definitely working on this Jewish lineage, which of course I didn't know. That wasn't my intention, but I saw things come through, and then I had things start to show up in my reality quite literally the next day. Like it was, I was at a, like a Burning Man type festival. Then don't ask, like the next day, because I was actually speaking there. And I, you know, because of the space I just came from, I was like, oh, I'm not going to party. I just want to hang out. And I came to a Seder at a, not a Seder, sorry, a Shabbat dinner.
Yeah.
And a Shabbat ceremony ritual at this festival. And so I spent like hours there and I was like, beautiful. I didn't know this kind of thing even existed. They were just singing medicine songs and they were just cool, normal people. And I'm like, and we're at a Burning Man festival on a beach. Like, yeah. And then, you know, a few months later is when I went and had this dieta that was all like, you know, the visions were very hard to sit with. They were, because there's no trace, you know, from what I understand my ancestry, there's been no trace of like, you know, direct Holocaust or direct this. You know, there's, it's kind of actually a very lost side of my family. Like my dad was the kind of Jew that just shut it off. Uh-huh. Like, 13 years old, he had his bar mitzvah and then just never talked about it again.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was raised Christian, Methodist, and my dad would just kind of go do his own thing while my mom took us to Sunday school. And we celebrated Christmas, but we my dad like literally never taught us anything and never talked about anything. And he even started suggesting as we got older, me and my brother, he would suggest that we change our last name. And he never said why. He just said, well, why don't you change your last name? And he would come up with names like Winston.
Sounds good.
And you know, it was like when I was older that I found out like what this was all about. But it was a very strange – so, of course, you know, the last – especially the last like 4 or 5 years, there's been a lot that's come through medicine work and not just medicine work, but, you know, all work around – this path. And then of course this year I just had this spontaneous feeling that like I need to go kind of like you just said, like I want to get back in touch with my roots.
Yeah.
Cause I do. It's like I don't deny who I am anymore. Like I did, you know, 20 years ago, but it's been interesting. Like, it's like who, you know, who am I like going to a high holidays?
Right.
So that's, and it's been interesting working with the medicine and like being able to almost like intentionally process some of this stuff, you know, that I didn't think it really had an effect on me until I realized like a lot of this, you know, anxiety and this pain and this scarcity and deep core wounds related to, you know, what survival, like literal, like scarcity issues, that I've done a lot of medicine work around, which stemmed from that one, you know, like my dad's ancestry. And it's been interesting. So yeah, I'm curious to know, like,
sure,
how do we process through this?
Well, there's a lot of ways. There's, you know, and there's just the ways that I'm presenting are just the ways that I know. So just to put that out there, you know, I'm very fond of thinking, one way of thinking about healing that I learned from my friend Daniel McQueen for the Center of Medicinal Mindfulness is awareness plus acceptance. And we're all working, I think, or let me say, I'll speak for myself, you know, working on awareness and acceptance in different measures. They both have their unique pace. But when it comes to what you're sharing, and I'll amplify some voices of people who have similar stories, you're not alone, first of all. And the second is that we start putting together partial information about where we come from. I just, you know, maybe a couple weeks ago, I put out on Twitter, just like, to Jews, how far back can you go? And what do you know about any of the people that you can go far back to? Like any intimate information? Do you know how they responded in trying situations? And it was really, really powerful to listen and see all of these stories and witness them. We can uncover some of the information about where were your grandparents from, Beth? Do you know?
It's weird. As far as I understand, you know, all I've been told was like, this is the Russian Jewish, the Russian Polish side of my family. And they came in, you know, I think it was, I want to say two generations ago is when they, you know, emigrated to America from whatever, you know, again, I'm like, Russia, what does that mean?
Yeah, you know, like, yes, that's exactly right. So that, I mean, that's one piece is just geography and locality are really, really important to this because it, just like you, you know, like I was told like Ukraine, like, what do you mean Ukraine? And the fact that these borders changed so often and you start looking at maps, you're like, well, it was here, but then it was here and then it was here. That does also then change a lot about when people were where they were and what was what were the political realities that they were living with. This has really become political work for me, is understanding the nature of my family's suffering and the suffering of Jewish families as being subject to political realities that by and large they did not have much agency in. And even those who did have a great deal of agency, let's say people from Western Europe who were well-to-do, that had an incredible amount of wealth and money, they did not stay there. Right? All of San Francisco was built by, a lot of San Francisco was built by wealthy Jews who decided to leave because they needed to be somewhere else. And what that could do to one generation, two generations, three generations. Like, I don't have a Holocaust story, but what I've come to understand is that regular violence, even the regular threat of violence to Jewish communities, could profoundly impact the way people thought about their lives and their prospects and the safety of their children or their assets. Think about that every single day. Think about that every single year. Think about decades and a couple centuries and millennia. And how that, you know, if Rachel Yehuda and all of the epigenetic people are right, how that then is determining how we respond to various things in our internal and external reality from a genetic level. And just how our families are organized and how our families, when they get together, what's the kind of language that they use? What's the kind, how do we talk about other people? How do we talk about money? How do we talk about food? How do we talk about our bodies? It's just like da 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 all the way down. And how do we talk about religion? How do we talk about spirituality or the lack of spirituality? You know, this becomes a refrain in lots of conversations where, just like you, my grandfather, he went into a synagogue. It was time for my biological father to have a bar mitzvah. And he's, you know, the synagogue said, it's going to be this much money. He was not a member. It's going to be this much money. Ugh, too much money for him to be bar mitzvahed. We're over. It's done. The entire complex network of it takes money to run a synagogue. We, you know, we're paying people to do the work. That's how you support our community. And then the feeling of like, wait, you're not going to do something for me? Why would I ever participate in this? And then what I, again, another hypothesis is that we mistake, I saw this something a long time ago, mistaking trauma for personality or mistaking trauma for culture. And then having a sense inherited in an inherited way that, well, we're not religious because we don't care about that, versus there being major reasons why people left their synagogues or they left religious practice. That when people like you or I come back to it in our own way, in our own pace, we're like, is this safe for me here? I'm desirous of it. But is it actually safe? because I have safe community. Like you just told me all about all of the beautiful ways that you are connected in your life that have nothing to do with Judaism. So what do you need to go to a synagogue or a Shabbat dinner for Seder? It's like, you're good. And if Jewish communities, synagogues, groups, organizations don't understand or don't have a better sense of what someone like you being on a medicine or a healing path actually means, how could they even like begin to like approach you with the spirit of wanting to support you or wanting to know where you come from or have curiosity about why you're there, right? That's an ongoing process in Jewish communities for being more welcoming and more opening and more curious about why people are coming. But it sounds like you landed on one of the few Jewish communities that is what we call syncretic, right? They're bringing in different traditions. They feel like we're going to do kirtan. We're going to talk about medicine work. We're going to incorporate maybe some Buddhist ideas. Like, and for someone,
they did tapping.
There was tapping. Maybe there was a sound bath during Kiddush. Who knows? There are those places where people are bringing all of these pieces together because it really works for them and it really inspires them. And there are some other pieces who people who don't want all of that stuff. They just want a synagogue that's nice, but they also want to feel like they can be on their healing path and also be able to just daven, just to pray. It is a beautiful process of clarifying where are we from? Why did people make the choices that they did? Do those choices have to be ours? And do we feel safe, empowered, resourced enough that if we wanted Judaism to look like what we wanted it to be, that worked for us, that supported us, that brought meaning and value to our lives through access to ritual, through the desire to learn a text, even if it is like complicated or like I don't understand it enough and it's hurtful for some reason. Can I ease in, even in the discomfort, in whatever discomfort it is, and find the thing that really sings to me? So I'm hoping that people who are working with medicine, they're working with vulnerability, they're working with intensity, they're working on their own regulation, can walk bravely into Jewish space and say, I belong here. I'm going to belong here. I'm going to find my people. I'm going to find resources. I'm going to make it my own. That would be the best outcome of what my organization is trying to do, what many individuals are trying to do, hopefully what people are hearing, and they can hear the call that's just not coming from me, it's coming through me, to wake up to their own Judaism.
This is beautiful. Wow. This gives me a lot of hope for where things are going. Because, I mean, you know, you name something important. People are leaving. I mean, I forgot what the actual statistics are, but organized religion in general, it doesn't really matter. It's like our generation is kind of moving away from that, sure. You know, except for things like, you know, maybe it's Christmas, maybe it's the high holidays. Maybe, I mean, even back when we were religious, it was really just all the Christian holidays. Yeah. It wasn't like devout. So I'm curious, you know, do you have, I know you do a lot of online work, but are you bringing people together in like in person, or is this like the vision to create kind of a new way of kind of like the group that I spent this time with over Yom Kippur? But what about people like actually going somewhere and meeting in person? Is that on the horizons or already happening?
Yeah, it is on the horizon. And we had one retreat in Berkeley, California. We had a Shabbat retreat at Urban Adama, an urban Jewish farm. I think you would love it, Beth. Definitely got to go. And that was our first in-person gathering. And we were there with Daniel McQueen from Center for Medicinal Mindfulness. And in this next year, we started during the pandemic, so everything was online. We're starting to have in-person events and teachings, but also we're going through this strategic planning process where we're going from this startup organization, me in my cottage, to a four-person team, to having proper payroll, to having, you know, all of these systems of a nonprofit organization. And in that process, we're trying to clarify, like, well, what is our role with regard to actually providing experience, right? That there is a desire that I hear and feel and see from people who want to be working with us and be, you know, involved with us, is that, you know, right now we're focusing mostly on integration. Like, that's where we feel like we can provide the most value, and it's completely unique. And I think more integration needs to be working in more places, not just Jewish spaces. People also come to us for preparation work. Rabbinical students calling me before their ketamine treatments, people who want to design their mushroom ceremonies with Shabbat in mind. Like, how do I make this a Jewish experience? I'm working with a non-Jewish guide. What are the pieces that I need to incorporate? I just spoke with someone who had, I can't even say the details, but they felt like from the person that was sitting for them that they had done something wrong because they had not seen all of the light and all of the wonder and all of the splendor, but just saw deep, deep darkness. And all I had to do was open up one of the foundational books of Jewish mysticism called the Zohar and read a passage which described all of the pregnant possibility that is found within the endless void. And she just started crying because that's what she felt like she was in for 8 hours. But when she came out, it was like, well, that wasn't so good. How can we bring people into a conversation about being okay and being sufficient in what they're doing? So we're going to be doing more in-person work, both in California and on the East Coast. We're always thinking about how we can be in international spaces, in Israel and other places as well. But this is really just the beginning. We want to get right what we are doing, which is teaching psychedelic Torah, which is offering integration circles, opportunities for community connection, doing it better and better. And then as we go, we'll continue to grow. Here we grow.
This sounds so beautiful. And I'm sitting here seeing, like, you know, this is one of my gifts/curses, because I always see these huge visions of people and what they're going to do and where it's all going. And I'm like, wow, I can really see kind of almost like how the Santo Daime came through. And, you know, like, I don't know the full history, but, you know, it's Christianity with ayahuasca. And they're just in.
And lots of Jews.
Yeah. But, you know, just this idea of, like, mixing these traditions. I actually recently had heard about this. I'm sure you know who it is. And I don't know if he's public or not, but it's someone, you know, a rabbi who I guess does these ayahuasca ceremonies that are centered around the Jewish tradition and not at all the ayahuasca plant, you know, the traditional. The lineage of certain ayahuasca, where it's like, okay, there's certain plant ikaros, and but supposedly, you know, it's kind of like, well, how can we actually maybe bring these modalities together, or these spiritual experiences together? And who knows, like, maybe this is what the world needs. You know, you mentioned also epigenetics, which is something that, I mean, we can't really deny this is very real. That's been one of the most powerful experiences I had, where I, you know, there was kind of just this knowing that there's a lot of, you know, stuff that my family was carrying. You know, it's like, I don't even know if the words matter, because it was like this energetics that just, you know, like, right. I could see it on family members. I saw it in my dad, and, you know, like, I feel like it's been kind of chipping away little by little, you know, and not just with medicines, but, you know, meditation and, you know, earth-based practices and just, you know, different way of living. Yeah, so
absolutely.
Yeah. I love the direction this is going in. Where, besides, you know, expanding into the experiences, you know, what else does your community, like, or what are people talking about out there? Like, I'm kind of always curious about where the future of psychedelics is going to take us and as a planet. And I'm curious, you know, coming from your perspective, do you think that there's more of a hope for this? Like, let's say, I mean, we've all heard about the ayahuasca circles they were supposedly having between Palestinians and Israelis. You know, I'm sure you heard about that.
I have.
Or, you know, like, is there, do you think there's a place where maybe these medicines are going to actually let all the religions one day get along? I mean, where do you, what is your big vision for the planet in the next, let's say, like 50 years, you know?
My big vision for the planet in 50 years, I mean, I want my kids to have clean water. Mm-hmm. I want my kids, you know, like, I want to worry about the planet, and I also just want to get real small and just talk about my little babies. Mm. Like, 'cause that's how I see part of the world, and part of my obligation is that I want them to not be under threat of political violence because of who they are, or other people for who they are or are not. I will leave the larger prognostication for other people, because what I see often is the tendency for that kind of like global thinking to elide the very big work of the individual, to have the buck stop with them. Mm. That, you know, we have in our tradition, we do, there's probably a term that you're familiar with. It's called Tikkun Olam. Right, the healing of the world. That's really big, healing the world. the healing of the cosmos, even, not just the world. Like, you want to heal the cosmos? Jeez. I am invested in Tikkun Olam Hakatan. That is healing the little world. The human body, the human individual, the human spirit is seen as a world in and of itself. And, you know, I have limited capacity, I have limited knowledge, I have limited power, but through individual work, through small groups, through the way that I am with my family, the way that I am with myself, I think that if enough of us can do that, and there's many traditions that talk about like the only thing that you can work on is yourself, ultimately, is to turn more people toward thinking of themselves as worthy of healing. That's enough. I am worthy of feeling okay with myself. I am okay. I am worthy of being okay with my body. I am okay with whatever it is. That would be my goal for the next 50 years, is that I'll even go, you know, just a circle outside. If we can do that in the Jewish community, where there is enough work to do, even just in my Jewish community, not just all the Jewish communities everywhere, that would be enough. So advocating for going small, other people can go big, that's fine. And also, you know, I want to just clarify and just make sure that people hear this, is that I am not necessarily advocating for Jewish ayahuasca circles or Jewish mushroom synagogues. What I'm advocating for is, first, if Jewish people are engaged in this work and they have questions and a yearning to connect as Jewish people or connect to the traditions that they want to enhance or didn't even know about, that's great. But we also have a profound tradition, many traditions, of achieving expanded consciousness without the use of psychedelics that are always available. That is really what I want people to know, is that this is not empty ritual. This is not sociology. This is not a Talmudic social club. But this is the ability to transform the way that one sees oneself and the world through individual and communal work. That would be an amazing vision for 50 years. And when people go into medicine space, then they know that that is possible, but then are able to work on achieving it outside of there. So we are the medicine. My life is the medicine. The conditions of my life are the medicine, and that's what the medicine is teaching me. And then just finally, I would say that, you know, in all of this conversation and our dedication to, or at least my dedication to social justice as part of this work, that we continue to see whatever medicine work that we are doing as being inextricable with ending the drug war and ending incarcerations for people who use different substances, and then creating coalitions of people who use lots of different kinds of substances for lots of different reasons, and not focusing on one class, but to see this as a continuum that we need to focus on and maybe put even more attention to.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And that's a beautiful, beautiful perspective. And I agree. It's not, you know, it's not about the psychedelic. It's about this whole potentiality that we have, you know, as a collective. And it's like each one of us planting. I always look at it as gardening, like everybody planting their own seed, you know, like doing their own inner work to then create the better for the whole, which, you know, who knows in 50 years, maybe how things could change. But, you know, it's leaders like you with these movements. And I think we're going to see more and more of this as people have these really big experiences and realize like, wow, maybe, I mean, that's how I found myself on this path. I was already business coaching, but through the medicine, you know, I kept getting these messages over and over and over for years that I ignored. And I was like, wait, but maybe there's like 25 people like me who want to talk about this, because I had no one to turn to for a long, long time about like how I'm integrating this medicine into my work and my business. And and it was the same thing where I was like, well, there must be a handful of people like me out there, you know, and it's more and more people I'm seeing are feeling that, you know, like, who do I turn to about my experience growing up as a Jehovah's Witness, you know, or being cut off from my father because I was Mormon and didn't go on my mission. Yeah. I mean, I've heard everything these, you know, by now. And I really just honor the work you're doing and how important it is. And, you know, this really inspires me. First of all, I can feel in my body, I actually feel a lot safer now around this path I've been on. And what I've been experiencing just even this fall with the high holidays of like, what does this all mean? And, you know, I was like, I don't want to come back here on a regular basis, you know, but now I'm like, oh, maybe I can explore this and feel safe and be in a welcome community and go to, you know, psychedelic Torah. I'm like, that sounds kind of cool. So
yeah.
maybe there is a way.
There's more than one way.
Yeah.
There are ways. And, you know, you could be like my wife. She likes to practice privately before public performance. You could read amazing books just to, you know, you don't have to jump in all the way into a communal setting. Like, what is an idea that I am really inspired by? What's a question that I'm coming into this space with? And to always be evaluating, like, is this okay? And am I okay being here, or can I go? And of course, just to say, Beth, you can also create your own Jewish space. You can do it. Bring people over for Shabbat. You know what you need? Candles, maybe even. You don't need anything. You need your intention to bring people together. You need your intention to have some elevated sense of what it means to be a person, a human being, a spirit, and to be in community with other people. Maybe you want to eat pizza. Maybe you want to eat the most decadent meal that you've ever created in your life. Like, whatever it is, it could be Taco Bell, don't care. But that it's just the intentionality that you bring. Mm,
yeah.
Start there. Beautiful. You want to create a psychedelic Seder later? I'll help you.
I'm going to go to a Seder this year. I mean it. This is 2023. It's happening for real.
Okay. We need invitations right now. If you are listening, reach out to Beth and tell her that she's coming to your Seder.
I mean, I blatantly invited myself just a few weeks ago to my friend. I mean, she knows because I've mentioned this for years. And I'm like, no, this year I'm coming over. So I'm putting it, now that it's on this podcast, I have to stick to it. But Zach, this is amazing. I want to leave you some space to talk about, you know, where people can find you, how they can join, you know, your organization or work with you. And we'll have all your links right here in the show notes, but anything you want to shout out that's coming up in the next few months too?
Yeah, absolutely. So People can always find us at www.shefa, S-H-E-F-A, flow, F-L-O-W, Shefa Flow. Shefa means flow or abundance in Hebrew. ShefaFlow.org. Signing up for our bi-monthly integration circles with our rabbinic intern team. They're beautiful people who are really dedicated to this work. It's a safe, peer-led environment or peer-based environment where people can talk about their psychedelic experiences as Jews with Jews. We have ongoing classes. I think we have a class coming up at the end of November about prayer as planetary consciousness. That is going to be led by our Director of Emergent Education, Rabbi Ami Silver. I think we're going to have a conversation you'll see online soon about what it means to be engaged in sacred reciprocity as Jews who are engaged in the medicine path. And you'll just see, sign up for our newsletter on the website, and there's just more coming. So stay tuned.
Beautiful. Ah. Thank you so much for this conversation. This is so good. And I'm so happy. And, you know, we'll have to reconnect, but I'm going to take a look at some of these events and, you know, maybe open up a little bit more than I have, you know, slowly but surely.
Even just a millimeter, if it feels okay.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Zach. I really appreciate you and the work you're doing in the world and how important it is. So please keep it up. Let me know if you ever need anything. We're happy to support. And you guys, at the very minimum, I even told one of my clients who's not Jewish, I said, you should probably join the Jewish and Theogenic Society Facebook group at the minimum, because she's going through a lot with her own religious upbringing. And I just think your community, I mean, even my one post was so welcoming. It just made me feel so, I actually was like, oh God, people are going to start bashing what I write. I was so scared. And then I'm like, oh, they're all so welcoming and sweet. And some of them even DM'd me and, like, you know, offered help. And I was like, oh, like, it just feels, it was a relief, you know? So great. Thank you for creating that community and this container for this work.
If it was only created just for that one moment, Dayenu, that would be enough. Shabbat Shalom. It's coming again soon.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you're feeling inspired, I'd appreciate it if you showed your love with a review. And check out my YouTube channel, where you can find the video version of this podcast. You can also head to bethaweinstein.com to learn more about me and grab my free business growth trainings. Remember, you carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times.